Either shape up or get. If you let all the fans down.
Can we not lock this?
It's a fact. I am not playing mind games. I am talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladici, I would probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions I don't know. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
All right, welcome along to Team 33. I'm Raf Giallo. As always, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. That's at Team 33. We're also on Facebook and also on iTunes. And you can find every podcast on the Off the Ball website and the New Stock one as well. And some of the interviews on the Off the Ball YouTube channel too. As you might have seen on the Twitter account, there is a lot of activity around the tweet we've put out about not just football shirt designs, but also the unnecessary use of away kits. And actually, this is a bugbear of a certain person that works in here as well, who's appeared on the show before, co-interviewed Mark Poom with me a few months ago, Ronan Mullen. So that's Ronan Mullen, works for Off the Ball, by the way, as well. But here is Ronan giving out about that issue.
Well, I'm not going to pretend that it's more than a surface level thing, Raf. There are more complex issues in football at present. You cover it deeply on Team 33. But this whole thing of enforced kit changes when they're not actually necessary, it just takes away from my enjoyment. I don't know. One that sticks in my head was the World Cup in Brazil. It was Brazil against Mexico, this storied rivalry that from decades past, you know, green against yellow. It's just the colours are so, like, even when you watch World Cup documentaries and stuff, they're so vivid. And Mexico turn up looking like Barnsley or wearing red and black. And yeah. You're like, what is the story here? And then United against Everton, which was a deplorable game to begin with, has since been, it was a joke shop at the weekend. United wearing this off, what is it, off red, salmon?
It's not even salmon, because salmon is, a real salmon colour is pinkier than that.
It looks like United had a white jersey and washed it with their red jersey.
Essentially, yeah. I don't think anybody's been able to correctly describe what that colour is. It's almost kind of strawberry milkshake, but without, like, where you've actually, like, maybe thrown in the tiniest bit of strawberry in there. It's not, you know, it's very white, but just a tinge of something. Like, and yeah. I can't really describe it, but
it's putrid.
The most egregious one, I think, for you though, is City Tottenham.
Oh, yeah.
And they did it twice in a row, obviously, because they were playing in the league and then before that the Champions League.
Well, see, the other one's kind of, it's a little bit romantic. The whole red versus blue. You touched on it earlier with the boxing analogy, red corner, blue corner. I don't know why you'd want to mess with that. But the Spurs City one, they actually made it more difficult to tell the two shirts apart. Like, it was absurd. You'd white against blue. Since when has that been a kit clash? Mm. And then they have this sort of, again, we have to get into colour specificities here. What was it, like a lime green mixed with blue?
Yeah, now because we have recorded this before,
here we go.
Before the rest of the chat has happened, I have not already decided that the colour is actually teal.
Teal.
T-E-A-L.
Teal's not a bad shade, but I think teal is in the family of sky blue. It is.
Sort of, yeah. It's kind of like aqua and all these other kind of other colours that are in that vague kind of blue-green kind of area.
If you're telling me the uber bright Man City jersey clashes with white, you might be able to sway me to that argument, but you can't
tell
me...
I'm not trying to sway you one way or the other.
You can't tell me it's more of a clash than the one that they ended up using twice, which vividly was an issue in the Champions League game, and then they just played ahead with it. I haven't actually checked what Spurs' third kit is, but surely even that has to be a better option.
Oh, probably. But look, it's a very important issue, and we're going to, obviously, Enda and Jonathan are here for the day, and we're going to get them to give their opinions on it. But it is an uber important matter. More important than anything that's happened in Irish or other football
over the last
while.
The Qatar World Cup and all that
stuff. Forget all that stuff. This is where it matters. All right, so that is Ronan Mullen of Off the Ball fame discussing the issue of away kits and the unnecessary use more so. We saw a few at the weekend where, say, Spurs probably shouldn't have needed to wear an away kit against Manchester City, but the more egregious one is Manchester United wearing that off pink, or I'm not sure what colour to call it, Jonathan Higgins and Enda Call, welcome, against Everton, when they could just wear the red and blue. Like, that's almost like two contrasts that work together, but for whatever reason, money, obviously, they've gone and used the away kit.
Salmon would be the colour I would call it.
It's not even pink enough for salmon.
It's even paler. Yeah. It's like salmon. Vomit salmon.
Yeah, it's it's so close to being white without actually being white, but at the
it's
same
like
time,
like you just, yeah, you know, you had like a red pair of socks, something you left in with your whites. It's
that,
just
that it actually looks like they got a United red kit and a United white kit and just mixed them together.
All right,
and,
we'll go with that this year. Yeah, no, it was,
yeah,
it's just like two primary colours against each other. The classic football colours, red versus blue. I just don't get it. Well, I know why they do it, but it does frustrate me. I have to say it's clearly marketing. When and once they got rid of that rule a couple of years ago, where up until a couple of years, you could only wear your away strip 8 times. They got rid of that to allow with all the excess marketing. It's sponsorship. You even see it, like, I know even Liverpool, what they usually do, the last home game of the season, they will wear the new kit for next season's kit, just to advertise it a bit more, because ultimately, once people see a kit on their football team, they were more inclined to buy it, and money talks.
Well, United even had to go to the effort of wearing black shorts with that pink kit because it would have clashed with the white Everton socks. And it was the first time I actually noticed they, and this is one thing that I actually kind of liked, was on the black shorts, they had the classic, just a pink strip.
Yeah.
Instead of like a, do you know what I mean? Like a thick pink line instead of three Adidas lines, which I thought was pretty nice. But again, they shouldn't have had to go to that effort, because red does not clash with blue and they should have been wearing a red kit.
Yeah, I was looking, well, actually, I had a bit of time in the office today, which is something I don't always have, but I was looking through the weekend and the clashes and where teams either wore away kits or there was kind of unnecessary use of it. So Chelsea, Burnley, that's fine. Burnley, the away team, wearing their home kit, as they should, because there's no clash there. Everton, Man United, we've just discussed, sacrilegious effort by Manchester United. Arsenal, Crystal Palace, kind of think that's fair enough. They were in their yellow away kit, and given that their colours are red and blue, there is a slight clash there.
You can justify that one.
Yeah, Cardiff, Liverpool, again, Liverpool on their best behaviour, wearing their
as
home
it should
kit,
be.
As it should be. You know, there's no clash there. It's exactly blue versus red, works out perfectly. Man City versus Tottenham, now, this is the one that that Ronan has the strongest feeling about. Now, the Tottenham away kit, I don't think people like anyway, and they don't necessarily need to wear it. Like, Man City's blue is blue enough that it doesn't clash with the white.
There's absolutely no reason. The white is more than adequate there. Again, it's another marketing decision.
Even with the navy shorts, navy shorts with the white top would have been fine in that case. Like, not that hard to tell the difference, and it was actually extremely hard to tell the difference in that kind of greenish colour, turquoisey colour that they wear.
Yeah, teal, is that what it is? It's like a bluey green, well, but more green than anything else. It's very poor though.
Yeah. I'm up for a debate on the colour of green it is.
Yeah, I've gone for teal. I don't think it's teal.
Moving swiftly
that's
onwards.
An actual word.
That's the biggest issue here.
Bournemouth versus Fulham, that was fine. Now, Fulham didn't wear black shorts, but it's not much of an issue. It's more the top half of the jersey that's the problem. Huddersfield, Watford. That one, actually, Watford were wearing their green away kit, which I don't think was necessary against Huddersfield's home one.
Well, the fact that Watford were wearing green in the first place is kind of off-putting as well, because they've changed their away kit in the last couple of years. They used to wear a red away kit.
Even their home kit, I've kind of gone off, because I think back in the old days, and they wear yellow jerseys, red shorts, and they've kind of gone to the black short jersey, and I'm not sure.
It's because of their whole, you know, the Hornets. They're trying to make their jerseys look like
branding,
Yeah, that's it. But
I don't like it.
There was a trend this year of teams who didn't wear green wearing green as their away kit. Watford did it. Brighton did it. And who are the third team? Their championship.
I've just got another flash into my head. I should have thought of when you were speaking about the Liverpool Cardiff game. The biggest they took it to Mr. Tate took it to extremes and flicking from blue to red. With Cardiff, remember the last time they were in the Premier League with Solskjaer in charge?
Oh,
it was absolutely
uproar.
Preston.
Oh yes, I remember that. Yes. Oh, Preston. Yes. No, that was pure marketing, though. Yeah. Wasn't he? But given obviously he's from Asia, and his claim was obviously the color red
is a lucky charm.
Yeah. So they move completely changed the tradition.
They completely changed the stadium as well. And if you notice, they actually have the top tier of their seats are still red as well. They haven't managed to change those back yet.
Yeah,
they'll be nice and ready for the championship with their dry pitch.
there's no such thing as red birds. I've heard of blue birds. Like, I mean, it completely destroyed the nickname. Every pillar of what that club used to be. Fortunately, they've gone back and will also be going back to the Championship too. West Ham versus Leicester, that was fine. Wolves Brighton, again, I think, as you mentioned, it's the green kind of away kit. So that wasn't good. Newcastle Southampton, I was kind of half on the fence here because, again, Newcastle in their usual home kit. Southampton were in the yellow top, blue shorts. But I don't know, black and white, red and white, is that too much?
To be
clash?
Fair, I don't have an issue with that one.
That one's not as bad.
Because of the nature of the stripes,
particularly for the offside
it
calls.
Is actually quite difficult to tell the difference between them regardless of the colour.
Yeah.
But also, Newcastle's kits in general are really hard in terms of clashing with... Because they're all kind of, they're a bizarre colour because black and white stripes.
And they've added the red
wine and blue away kit. And then their third kit is a disaster as well. They're all horrible.
Yeah, I haven't seen a good Newcastle kit in probably since the Bobby Robson kind of era. There were a few kind of good ones then, and I think the 90s ones as well. But
too many good jerseys.
Do you remember, I'll probably show my age a little bit, but I used to always remember my parents saying the reason why there was often changes of kit was because the two colours wouldn't be recognised on black and white television. That used to be the big thing back in the day as well. I repeat, I'm getting a lot of stares from both of the younger colleagues alongside me, but that was it.
Not that young.
that was originally one of the reasons why countries where they mightn't still have colour TV, and they would have to change the kits if there was what would come out in black and white to change it. Now, obviously, with 4K and
so
8K.
We're talking about, like, say, the 1966 World Cup final where England are in their... their away kit, whereas the Germans are wearing their home kit, which is a bit of a weird one.
But. Yeah. So yeah, just another tangent to throw into there to the wild world.
Yeah, I never actually thought about that. But then again, as I said, I'm not from the black and white TV era.
The differentiation is a big key because I was actually looking up some of the different factors that might come into play. And there's some things you might not actually think about, and it's not purely marketing. So, for example, it's in the Premier League rules that, let's say, Burnley are playing Manchester City at home. So, or away, either or. One of those teams will have to be wearing their away kit because the home colour on Burnley's shirt on the sleeves is bright blue or light blue, which for offside calls makes it really difficult to see.
Yep.
So it might actually look like you can completely tell the difference between the maroon of Burnley and the light blue of Man City, but it's just the arms that make the difference.
Yeah, well, okay, that's not an issue. It's more the Manchester United one at Everton. There is no excuse whatsoever. I mean, red and blue, it's a thing in boxing. You have a red corner and a blue corner. Like, they're completely diametrically opposed. So you'd think that's fine. There's no issue in terms of refereeing trying to pick them apart, and yet they go for that horrible kind of whatever colour we haven't decided, sort of a pinky kind of colour.
Teal.
Sorry, I looked up what the colour of teal. You're right, it is teal.
Oh, is it teal?
Yeah.
All right.
Spot on.
Yeah.
As always.
Google teal if you're a listener there, because again, I can't really describe it. It's one of those kind of blue-green things that would also be aqua or whatever as well. But that's actually got more on Ronan's nerves. But then the more I think about it, the angrier I get about this kind of pure marketing thing. And probably if I was in charge of a club, I'd do the exact same if I'm trying to flog shirts.
Well, why do teams need a third kit in general?
It's a
purely marketing thing.
It's a fashion
and
kit.
And there's another thing coming in now that is, if it becomes an actual trend, the clubs start doing it and start wearing these kits, I might flip a lid. Is, do you know the mashup kits that teams have started to do now? I think Man City did one where it's like they've taken all their best jerseys from the last couple of years, mashed them all together and made a kit out of it, and then they sell them online. Man City did it recently and Barcelona did it recently, and that is just a pile of nonsense because they never look nice and they're just a pile of nonsense. They're just made to be sold.
Man City for looking for money, who would have known?
Yeah, the other thing I think we did want to bring up as well, outside of the actual changing of kits and, you know, wearing away ones, it's the design as well. Now the collar seems to be the one. Enda has it on his phone there. Actually, that is a horrible, I don't know.
I've been watching a lot of Line of Duty recently, and his regular thing is, for the benefit of the tape, well, for the benefit of our listeners, Inda's just shown us what I can describe as projectile vomit of a load of different Man City kits. mashed up together. It's horrible. Yeah, no, that's not going to sell. Who's going to buy that? Surely
it looks like it glows in the dark, but not in a good way either. But yes, as I was saying, the design of kits. So I think it was you in the office who was kind of pining for the collar, which has completely disappeared and would make Eric Cantona and that whole, I suppose, his aura would actually take away one element of that as well.
Yeah, they're just football jerseys are just better with collars, and they've completely taken away from them. There are a couple of collars on jerseys now, but they're little like makeshift collars that don't actually close or don't actually do anything. They're just,
I think the Dutch brought one out, isn't it, for 2018? Yeah, which is it is technically a collar, but it doesn't work like a collar.
Man City have Man United had a collar a few years ago. I think you remember the white one from 2014-15. Van Persie wore it. It was white and it had a black collar, but it was again a collar that didn't actually open or close. It was just there. Liverpool's jersey has a collar this year.
Next season's won't, though. The next season's home kit won't.
Well, there you go. And it's just iconic from the 90s is Eric Cantona walking
around. It's just Cantona, though, isn't it? It's just that chest collar up. That's the image you'll have. And then I used to transfer, like, Galway. Like, I remember Pádraig Joyce used to wear his collar up. Neil Finnegan used to wear his collar up. And you'd be that little clown at the club game with your collar up then following them. Yeah.
It's another thing where Razor Ruddock tried to pull down Cantona's collars to try and get on his nerves as well. Like, I mean, that story obviously wouldn't happen now, unfortunately. Like,
ruining the game. The game's gone.
This is what the game is losing with no collars. And apparently, like, I was reading it's obviously very recent. So the 90s is when the pure collar came in, and obviously Cantona being in and around that time. But it was around 04, 05, I think, where the trend properly changed, where they all wear these kind of skin tight things, and it was AS Roma apparently that were the first to kind of
do it. Spurs had introduced them then to Premier League, pretty much, as far as I remember.
That's another thing that has kind of gone out of the jerseys, and I don't like it. So they're all fitted properly to the players instead of, do you know the picture of Robbie Keane?
Yeah.
After he scored the goal against Germany, and the jersey is literally hanging off him, and it was. Such an iconic way to wear a jersey, and it made no sense whatsoever, but it was beautiful. The jerseys were gorgeous, and it just summed up that time.
For me, it's Serie A. You go back to Batistuta or whatever, with the massive baggy shorts and the big, big baggy shirt. It's oversized, and it's just a bit of swagger, a bit of swaz or whatever with it.
You'll never get that again, though, because of, you know, aerodynamics and sports science and everything's down to
potentially. Yeah, no, and from what I was reading about that Roma thing as well, again, it was down to the fabrics they're using.
Well, particularly in Italy as well, where there's a lot of shirtogan
on
penalty boxes. So that's one way to resolve that without the need of VAR.
Yeah, and apparently I don't think some players don't like having collars because they find it irritating or annoying or something, which I'm not sure. I mean, I wear shirts with collars and I can work perfectly fine with them. Obviously, this is not the same as playing an elite level
in
football.
It's a scientific experiment here.
No. But it was apparently that lighter fabrics and ones that can stretch as well, and it doesn't go well with a collar. But again, we're losing something here.
Puma have taken that to a complete new level, though, with their skin tight jerseys that you can see every kind of bump on their chest, and it's absolutely disgusting. And the sooner they go out of jersey making, the better.
I think, were they the ones that did the Cameroon, you know, the famous zipped up one kind of one piece thing? Because Cameroon had a few jerseys where
they had some funky ones, even in 2002. It had the slit on the armpit as well, didn't it?
Yeah, no, they brought in like the little kind of vest shirt thing, but with no sleeves essentially. But then were forced to kind of wear black sleeves or something underneath it just because obviously football, FIFA were not in favour.
Trevor Giles cutting his sleeves off.
The only thing is, great, if you're an athlete and you're chiseled and everything else, that's great having the skin tight thing. But then what if you're just an ordinary.
It's not something to wear to the pub, is it?
No, like, I don't go to the gym anymore. So, like, what's the point? What's the point of that for someone like myself?
Yeah, but I think they've moved. Like, I remember back in the early 90s when they first came out, and you used to even notice it as well in with the Gaelic jerseys as well. They went through that phase of being ultra skin tight, almost like the Under Armour inside air. They've kind of gone back a little. They're still quite tight. They're not rugged, nowhere near the Batistuta levels, as we call it, from the big bagginess. But there is still, they're still quite a slim.
Even in rugby, actually, when you look at the old jerseys they would have worn in the 90s, and I think the trend kind of happened around the same time for all the sports, but they were big, baggy kind of things, very easy to grab onto. And now they're just, again, built for the more chiselled physique of the modern player. And not saying the players back in the day were not as chiselled, but they clearly weren't.
Yeah, there's definitely an evolution of the game, isn't there, in terms of sports science and physical bodies, etc.
Yeah, it's just, I don't get it. Like, a lot of these, like a lot of the jerseys now are just kind of forgettable for me now. So I wouldn't be out of my way kind of buying anything because they don't stand out in time. Whereas there's a load of Man United ones from, say, the 90s that back in that day, they kind of stand out to you.
Yeah, up until around about, I would say, do you know what? I would actually cut off the point of nice Man United jerseys when Vodafone stopped sponsoring them around about 2005, I think it was. That was the last jersey I particularly liked that Man United brought out. It's just because they bring out three new kits every single year. I mean, you can't enjoy that. And when it's a bit like football boots have kind of gone the same way. When every single team's jerseys look the exact same, it's not like you used to be able to name a footballer and name what kind of boots he wore because they wore their own kind of boots. They got to pick them, whereas now they're all sponsored by Adidas. They're all marketing Adidas gear, and all the footballers are wearing the exact same football boots.
Mm.
Whereas it's the same with jerseys now. All the jerseys look different back in the early 2000s and the late 90s. But nowadays, everyone's sponsored by the same people. All the jerseys go by the same templates, and they're just forgettable.
Yeah. I have to say, to be fair, while they're not the most on paper, if you ask a couple of guys around the table what's your iconic sports brands, you'd probably get your Nikes, your Adidas, or whatever. But New Balance have done an awful lot for Liverpool in terms of some serious quality kits brought out. Like the home season jersey from 2 years ago, they went back to the traditional blood red, beautiful. Now, it's not a collar, but it had a white V-neck collar, just a classic kit. And even next season's kit, the home kit, is quality. It's a rollback to the kind of the 80s kit where it's the blood red with the yellow pinstripes, a classic jersey. So they have produced some quality jerseys. They're jerseys that you will actually wear and buy as opposed to a lot of the kind of stereogenic kind of copy and paste jersey where you see one jersey and they have a template and they just kind of tweak it ever so slightly. I think some of the bigger brands have been guilty of that, but I have to say credit where credit is due. New Balance have brought some really, really nice
stuff. The Ireland one, given that they're involved with that as well.
Yeah, I probably haven't been gone. They're decent kits. They're not kits that make me go wow. I think there's bigger issues there. We spoke a couple of weeks ago about the badge as well. I think that needs to be kind of changed, doctored up. But yeah, look, I suppose with the Ireland kits, I'd kind of go at them like, yeah, they're decent. I probably wouldn't buy them or whatever. You wouldn't wear them that regularly as where some of the Liverpool ones, I suppose, it's a bit more nostalgic where they've gone back to some of the older ones. If you kind of go, oh, you grab your attention.
Yeah, I do. And maybe just as time has gone on, like the old Adidas ones that Ireland would have had up till, I think it was 1994-ish or 93 or whenever, just before Umbro came in, like they're quite nice. Well, I do like the stripes down the side. Like that's just the classic Adidas look, but I think the Ireland jerseys of that era
even
kind of looked better.
That kit was, I think it was John Aldridge shared a picture there last week or the week before. I think it was his Ireland debut and, you know, he just tweeted it.
I just got sent that.
And these quality retro Adidas kits are kind of tracky tops as well. So yeah, that age, that kind of era there was from, particularly now when we look back, I love all the retro gear. So yeah, there's some quality stuff from that time.
Yeah, even away jerseys, and I know we were giving out about the use of them, but there's some Man United ones, say, from, I think it's 95, 96, so the blue and white one, if you remember. Yeah, yeah. Remember that?
That was the one with the kind of the card or the little bit of tie on that collar, was it? No, that was the yellow and green one, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but it was just kind of blue either side and then kind of a white stripe in the middle. Obviously, the grey ones were not that memorable because they were
45 minutes
taken off at halftime, obviously for reasons that they couldn't pass or pick each other out or whatever. But there's a few from that era. And then even if you go back, the 70s jerseys, the Dutch team of 74,
mm-hmm.
kind of obviously cool, the orange always stands out, but just the black stripes and that on it as well, like just very nice ones. I'm not sure what else I'd kind of pick out. There's a few, like international jerseys are always pretty.
Some of the classic Germany ones are quality as well.
Yeah, I think Richie Mack was talking about the Germany 1990 ones last week. So they would have had kind of like the German flag, but almost zigzagged across the front. So they've always had a few good ones. Spain as well have had a couple of kind of unique ones. I wouldn't say they're nice. You know, the old kind of design where they have kind of like a big black kind of patch kind of goes down. So that's something they used to use in the 90s, but that's kind of disappeared now. I won't talk about England. France had a nice one in 1998. Actually,
that was
as well.
The 98 yeah, that one was nice really, one. Really nice.
Yeah, but there's international jerseys anyway. At their peak, can be pretty good.
Do you think are they better, or do we just remember them more fondly because of the era that they came from? Like, are we using a bit of nostalgia, painting a nicer picture of what the jerseys actually are, because we remember the likes of Zinedine Zidane sporting that 98 kit. If you look back at the Brazil 02 kit, Ronaldo is what springs to mind.
With your haircut.
Yeah, no, that Brazil 02 one, I know that design was pretty much used by, I think, South Korea, the exact same kind of Nike design where the number was in the circle.
Yeah,
and
that was the big fades.
All the Nike jerseys were kind of the same, but like South Korea had it, Brazil, there were a couple of, any country that was sponsored by them, they all kind of looked the same, just the colour was different. But nostalgia-wise, maybe. Maybe you're
I don't think so. I just thought I'd throw that bombshell out there.
No, there's a couple of some of the classic. I suppose what you're kind of, it's probably not a like for like comparison, because you're picking the best out of 10 years or something like that and comparing them to 5 or 6 from 1 year. But there is some quality jerseys from that time that you'll pull out. Like, again, I'm slightly biased. I love all that retro stuff, but there is a couple of ones there that I think do stand out a lot more than some of the current day ones.
Well, the sponsors are a big thing now. Sponsors are absolutely horrible because, I suppose back in the early days of the Premier League, you would have been looking at different like kind of local businesses or
in
like
some cases
British
yeah.
businesses yeah. and things like that. Whereas now they're coming from all over the world, and it's whoever has enough money to pay. And like Crystal Palace is a big one for me. Is like that's an actually it's their kit is really really nice, and the away kit especially is gorgeous. The white one with the diagonal red blue going down it. I suppose you could call it a sash, but I won't call it a sash. And then it's ruined by a big, filthy Asian writing that's just like twice as big as it should be. And then you have the likes of Roma ruining their gorgeous kit by sticking a Qatar sponsorship on it. Barcelona did it a few years ago. They're not sponsored by Qatar anymore, but they ruined it. And United as well. The Chevrolet sponsor is just ridiculously hideous.
I liked Sharp, not the company, Sharp, but there's the design actually
iconic,
on the jersey,
yeah,
or JVC for Arsenal.
Yeah, absolutely.
What was Liverpool
Crown
in the
Pains.
Like Crown Pains? Yeah, that was it. And then you switched to Carlsberg then
for
at some
quite a while. Yeah, and then went through. But yeah, you even have to add in like the shirt sponsorship now. It's a separate match sponsor or a shirt sponsor, just another logo on the sleeve. Yeah. It's like. Is it some of the Italian ones is where there's like sponsorship on the back as well?
Yeah, I think it's Germany actually where they'd have the name is actually further down on the back, yeah. And then the sponsor is actually
where
just at
the
very
the name
top. Yeah,
it used to go. Yeah, so yeah, like it'll soon be like the darts and snooker players with little patches of sponsors all around.
Well, in South America, that's how the kits look already. They're just covered in sponsors, which is horrible.
They actually need the money though.
I don't really have an issue with the sleeve sponsors as long as you don't get Angry Birds
like Everton.
Yeah,
they are like the amount of effort that Everton had to go, and Angry Birds, I suppose, to a certain extent, because it's ultimately they're red, so they had the big slogan, he's not red anymore, he's now blue, and switch over. It's just quite ironic. So just I think the point I was going to make is it's just the levels that people will go to justify a marketing campaign.
Yeah, that Everton kit's actually quite nice, except for the whole Angry Birds being on the side of it. It's kind of takes away from Everton a little bit.
I think simplistic design probably is the easiest
classic
thing. Yeah, I think when was it? I think it was around the anniversary of the Munich air disaster. Man United kind of brought back a very simplistic design based on the 58 team would have worn. That was a lovely jersey. Yeah. And you kind of hope they kind of more teams kind of go back to that more retro look as well.
You hope like if New Balance have started now with some of the Liverpool kits, it would be nice if some of the other companies kind of latch on that, because it usually comes where one does it and then others follow place. Yeah, from a personal point of view, it would be quality if you see some of the old classic ones, or even just they don't have to be complete old school, but they can be a new design with it. That would be all for the better for our eyes.
I was actually looking at the best jerseys of 2018-19. And Lazio's is phenomenal. They've stuck to their old colours, you know, the blue.
Yeah.
But the bird in the middle, it runs straight through the chest and up onto the arm, so the stripes run across the sleeve.
Continues,
they don't have a sponsor and they have a collar. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, no, the Italian teams have always tended to have, AC Milan used to have some very nice jerseys in around kind of late 90s, 2000s as well. I think there were a couple with collars on them as well.
I used to love the Juventus one as well. They used to have like the Italian flag and the logo and a few of the bits and pieces. They just look sharp. They look quality.
Yeah, actually, I can see the Lazio one there. It's quite nice. I had a Roma one. I still have it from 2013-14. That was just a simple design.
That was
as well.
One with
just
the guitar on it.
Yeah, yeah, there was no sponsor on it.
Basically
yeah.
the exact same as they have now, yeah. except we're without guitar.
But just look nice.
I think that Fulham are going to be the nicest jersey ever relegated from the Premier League because their two kits this year were the best across Europe, I would say.
Their away one is black, is it?
Black and white, yeah. and their home one is white and black with the black running through the middle in, as a hoop.
The away one always looks great when you see... Babel wearing it with his big red head as well. It just stands out even more iconic.
Yeah, no, there's a few home or away, you're not going to beat a Sampdoria jersey. Well, theirs is just a kind of a design they've always kind of had, but I've never actually had the luck of owning one, unfortunately.
An unfairly nice jersey.
Yeah, no, it's just the best of any. And even the away jersey generally is the same exact same design, except it's usually white or some other white or black or something like that. But I think we've exhausted this jersey, shall we? We've pushed through it.
Can I say one more thing? Yeah, because I was actually looking at a load of jerseys from that are possibly coming out next year.
Yes.
And Inter have, because Inter Milan's kits are usually spot on. They're usually just stick to the same blue and black with the Pirelli sponsorship, and they're changing it next year. Apparently, they're changing it to diagonal stripes instead of normal stripes. So it's going to be black and blue going diagonally. I don't know, but it's horrible. They've ruined their jersey. If they go through that, they've ruined it completely.
Yeah, well, I remember Barcelona the year they won the Champions League and beat United in the final. They had the, instead of the blue and red stripes, I have that jersey at home somewhere, yeah. No, not the hoop, just one side blue, one side red.
Yeah. That is a nice jersey. I actually kind of like that one. They're changing their jersey next year as well. They're getting rid of the stripes again and changing it to checkers, which is also horrible.
No, well, I liked the 08-09 one, but mess too much with it.
They had a gold version of that as well, I think around the time of Rivaldo there as well. It was just kind of a gold and it just had the Barca crest on the top. It was quality as well at the time.
Are they the only two that are changing?
As far as I can see, anyway. Just while we're on Barca as well, you're never beating the 04-05 one. The thin claret and blue stripes.
Mm.
With no sponsor and the Nike tick further up here, Ronaldinho.
You just
years.
Think Ronaldinho, don't you, when you see that kid?
Oh, yes, actually, yeah, I can think of it now. But yeah, no, Barcelona generally, I'm not looking forward to whatever they put out next year, but they've always had a couple of interesting designs and they do mix it up without getting it too far wrong. Unlike, say, Bayern Munich, who seem to have changed
every
quite
now
a bit.
And again,
yeah.
They get a dud, don't they?
Yeah, no, but they kind of markedly changed. Like, they went for the red and blue stripes at one point, and then the kind of more plain red where you don't see any blue on it at all. And, I don't know. They've never really had any consistent kind of look to what they're doing. But we are going to switch now to the title race, given you're here, and the fact that Liverpool and Man City are not blinking. And that's actually just remarkable.
It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. Like, the quality is... Well, I don't think we've seen a quality of two contenders like this for quite some time. You almost in your head, I just have to keep reminding yourself, like from a Liverpool point of view, there's three games to go. And it feels like they would just, these two teams would keep on going for the whole summer and still keep grinding out wins. Standard is incredible, like 88 points, and to be not to be runaway leaders is just almost unheard of. And City, fair play to them, they, you know, one of the most expensively assembled squads, but they're playing some unbelievable stuff. They keep on going, but Liverpool just won't lie down and ground out another difficult game at the weekend. There was a lot of talk for Monday night about Burnley being anti-football and stuff like that, but Cardiff were equally as so on Sunday. And look, you know what you're going to get with a Neil Warnock team. You definitely know what you're going to get with a Neil Warnock team that's in a relegation dogfight, and they can do everything they can just to try and grind out a result. Liverpool are answering a lot of questions. They're answering a lot of questions in many, many different ways. And the run that they're on is incredible. And no matter what happens between now and the end of the season, I think both teams have to stand back and be proud, because it's just been a remarkable, remarkable title race. I don't think we've ever seen anything like this, really.
Yeah, it was actually the first Liverpool goal that kind of impressed me most, because I think Klopp was talking afterwards. It was actually that whole, the corner that swung in low, having tried a few higher ones that weren't, didn't seem to be getting anywhere, and yes. Wijnaldum's free. The fact that the players are taking ownership on the pitch and deciding, you know, to
funny story, but so I was down with Will on Midlands on Sunday doing something for them around the game, and thankfully we're off air at the time, and as Trent took the corner, I was like, oh Jesus, what a crap corner. The couple of guys alongside me took great pleasure in as the replays flashed up and saw a perfectly weighted ball to Genie to smash home. Yeah, no, Klopp spoke how pleased he was. Apparently that was just something the guys put together. The one thing I have to say is I just cannot for the like of me understand where some of the question about Salah penalty or the Salah dive, you want to call it that. Like, it was just incredible. Like, it would have been a free kick in hurling or Gaelic football or whatever, like a complete couple of arm wrestles. And
well, he did
like,
throw himself to the
he
ground.
He did, but like...
It was a penalty, but he did throw himself to the ground.
Yeah, but you answer yourself, would he have got the penalty if he hadn't done that?
I would say probably.
No, I don't think
he has to go down.
Mm-hmm.
But I think where people have the issue is the manner of which he went down. He threw himself to the ground like he'd just been shot, and I think that's the biggest issue here.
Yeah, there's been a couple of different. I can't remember even last season at Old Trafford, where Ashley Young spent the game doing that similar sort of.
I'm not arguing that. Most players do it.
Unfortunately, the way the game is, if you don't go down, you won't get the penalty. And there's been, I can even think of two or three already this season where similar scenarios where if you don't go down, you don't get the penalty. The referee should have given the penalty after the first arm wrestle across. Like, he's no intention of playing the ball whatsoever. It's just clearly a foul of the man, and it was interesting to see as well. Salah was quite adamant that he wanted to take the penalty, but was quickly shown. Millie showed his authority by grabbing it off him and sticking it away, which just kind of speaks volumes. Because I've seen Liverpool teams over the years where it would have almost been for, oh yeah, you have a chance of winning the golden boot, away you go. Now there's a bigger picture, and The squad are definitely evolving. There's a mentality amongst the Liverpool squad that I haven't seen in my lifetime. I really haven't. They seem to be capable of winning all types of football games. Cardiff tried to pretty much bully them there at spells, but they just kept on playing their game, and it was a massive 3 points. And who knows what's going to happen between now and the title run in, but no one ever can ever doubt the quality of this team and the character this Liverpool team has shown to the improvement from last season, from finishing fourth, and to keep on going. And if this isn't a flash in the pan, whatever happens, I think Liverpool will step on from here.
All right, rousing speech there.
Well, whatever about, I just wanted to say about the corner, whatever about Klopp being happy about them making up that on the spot or however they went about it, Neil Warnock has to be furious by the defending. Like, if you watch a replay, Wijnaldum starts at the edge of the box and there's nobody marking him, and he runs through the box and nobody picks him up.
I nerdily watched a couple of them back afterwards, but there was a couple of them there in the first half where he was in a similar scenario. It was just those players in front of him. So if you notice again, like Van Dijk and Firmino and a few others, they completely do dummy runs to the far end to make that space for him to run into. Then it was just like they never reacted, and it's unusual because usually with a team like the likes of Cardiff or whatever, they rely solely on set pieces as their bread and butter, particularly from attacking point of view as well. But they're usually so rock solid. Liverpool have turned into a team that were completely weak as water from both defending and attacking set pieces. But now that's 20 goals from set pieces this season. It's been a remarkable turnaround, and it just shows the small differences what can make.
Because, well, they have the most goals from set pieces this year, which 20. Is extraordinary. They're just not a team that you would associate that with, and they don't really have any particular strong players
Van
in
Dijk,
the air.
Van Dijk, maybe whoever the second centre half is, usually it'll be whether it be Matip or Lovren or Gomez, who's just come back as well. Maybe them, but then you're looking full backs, midfield, up front.
But even then, it's not even coming from the likes of Van Dijk. He only has 2 goals
this year. Yeah.
And I think what they're relying on a lot is Firmino's natural goal scoring instincts. The same with Mane, the same with Salah. Like, a lot of the goals are coming from a failure to clear the ball properly, and they're in there to poach.
There's definitely a targeting on opposition weaknesses, and there's kind of manufactured and practiced routines of, like, even I remember the Spurs one where Salah got ended up being the OG Lloris, made the big mistake, but that again was a weakness that they targeted and they trained on, and all throughout the Liverpool team and the training they are focusing on the small details and all sets pieces. So from someone that is kind of a football nerd and loves all the geeky stuff as well, it's fascinating to watch all the I think England took it to a new level in the summer, the amount of set pieces they got and the amount of from a lot of practice of training routines, and now you're seeing Liverpool kind of be beneficial as a lot of hard work like that as well.
Doesn't seem to be as detailed at Manchester United's training ground, it seems like. It was one of the worst, man. And I've seen a few bad ones over the last few years, but that was one of the worst United performances against Everton, even aside from the kit. The actual play was horrific.
It was shocking.
Yeah.
It was... the players just didn't look like they wanted to be there, which is a worrying sign. Solskjaer is saying that it's due to tiredness because the players were unfit because Mourinho didn't do enough work. But really and truly, it's just came down to attitude. Matic is absolutely gone. His legs are gone. People were criticising De Gea for the second goal and the third goal, but I don't think he can do much about it. The bounce for the second goal came at the worst possible time, because I think De Gea actually gets that if it doesn't bounce. I completely lay the blame at Matic's door for that as well, because I've seen Snails close down the ball quicker than that. And
Lukaku as well.
Like three of the goals were brilliant goals, but it came from just the United players just not caring, and there has to be a clear out at the end of the year, because I don't buy into the whole hysteria around Solskjaer. Like everyone was saying when he won a few games that he should be getting the job, and now everyone's saying after a few games of having the job and it's not going right that he should be sacked. And it's just everyone needs to calm down a bit and actually think about what they're saying, and think, just give Solskjaer a chance. Like, he shouldn't have got the job in the first place. They should have just waited to the end of the season. That was the fault of the United board. They jumped the gun. But it's equally as naive to jump the gun now and say that he should be under pressure, and that, you know what, he actually might not be the man for the job.
Mm. I do get a sense they are, like, the media are starting to turn the finger on the players and which ones need to go and which ones need to stay. Yeah. And that's at least, because it does seem, unless something drastic happens, I don't see Solskjaer getting sacked before the start of next season. I mean, that would be...
Not even that.
Crazy. Like, the people are chatting about how he's definitely not going to last until the end of the next season. Like, what are you basing that off? You're basing it off a few performances that didn't go their way. And I think we all knew that these players weren't good enough in the first place. And I think we all knew that there was going to be a bounce when he took over. The problem was when people jumped the gun and said, he's definitely the man for the job, he should get the job. And it's the exact same people now that are questioning him.
Yeah, the thing about it really was, he got the bounce that, no matter who went in, no disrespect to Solskjaer, no matter who went in to take that job after Mourinho, how stale it was, there was always going to be a positive bounce back. Now, he took that bounce to new extreme levels, but people got completely carried away with it. It was surprising. I've never seen the wool pulled over fans, media, everyone involved. It was completely over the top. And let's be honest, it was a fantastic result against PSG, but it was quite fortunate. Like, I think that game is played a couple of times again. They don't get those rub of the green, particularly with some of the decisions at the end. There are things that go either way. You can't say it was a good kind of game plan, but it's not going a game plan where it goes, wow, okay, this is definitely from the guy from the job. And I think too much was played into that. The timing of both the appointment and the announcement of Solskjaer was just crazy. I don't know why they did it. I've said it many times. I personally don't think he was the right man for the job, but definitely, even if you are given the job, wait till the summer. Have the carrot of, you're still in the Champions League, go on, see what you can do. But most importantly, we're in touching distance of getting Champions League football. Go on and secure that. Then we'll talk in the summer. There was no reason for them to give them the job, but they did. Now they're at a struggle because things change a lot if United don't get Champions League football. We've even seen some of the... Now, it's not totally responsible, but I think it is in a small part. You look at the performances of Pogba and even De Gea to a lesser extent. There's all sort of talks going on. If United don't get Champions League football, there's going to be pay cuts, and they're going, oh no, we should be exempt from that. And there's noises going on that you shouldn't really have at this stage of the season.
Yeah. I disagree with the point that things change massively if United don't get Champions League football. I don't think it's a disaster, and I don't say that in using any bias towards that. I look at the example of Jurgen Klopp. Liverpool didn't get Champions League in his first season, and look where they are now.
Well, United's finances are at a point, I think they can take a hit for a season.
Yeah, but see, their wage structure is completely messed up now because of the Alexis Sanchez deal. But once he's gone, then that kind of changes everything. You don't have players that are earning 400k a week.
It's not a healthy situation the way it is at the
moment. It's not. But there needs to be a clear out, and there's going to be a clear out. Valencia's already gone. Yeah. Pogba's probably gone at this stage, let's be honest. He's more than likely performances look out like the that. Door. Yep. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. They're probably going to make their money back and more and have more.
I would sell him in a heartbeat.
Pogba's just the frustration, and I think that Gary Neville alluded to him without actually saying his name
for sure.
In that post-match rant. He is undeniably the most talented player in the squad, if not the Premier League, but he is the most frustrating player to have in your squad.
He's
because
too inconsistent. If I was his manager, I don't know how I'd kind of cope with him. I wouldn't even bother with that. I think I should sell him. No, look, he's clearly a talented player. He doesn't seem to be a bad lad either. He seems like a happy-go-lucky kind of character. Not whatever Mourinho was calling him, but I think just dealing with his performances on the pitch.
Now he's just immature. He just drifts in and out of games. If he doesn't care about the game, he doesn't care about the game, and that's it. He's not going to perform for you.
I think you have to follow.
Like he couldn't play in Klopp's team.
No, for sure.
That could not happen.
Actually, kind of leads on to the point I was going to say is now it's not a direct comparison. I'm not comparing the two players, but you'll see what I mean by the point. It's almost like the Coutinho model now, where you sell that skillful player that you don't really rely on, and you invest it in key areas. Like Liverpool got Alisson and Van Dijk on the back of. Largely on the back of that deal, when United need something similar. But I think United have bigger problems structurally. The club has been a mess on and off the pitch for a couple of years now. They need a proper director of football. They need some shape on the transfer. Well, man, if they gave Mike Phelan the job, Jesus. Like, that would just add petrol onto the Solskjaer appointment for me. If you give someone like with no experience like that, you need a proper director of football that knows it. Because United, it's not as if they haven't spent money. There's a lot of big money signings in that squad. They play huge wages. But yet, you look at their squad and you'll get rid of 70-80% of the squad. If you go through them a lot and ask a room of 10 people, you're going to be up in that high of percentage of players that most people want to get rid of and rebuild. So there's a complete rebuild, and they can't have this kind of temporary thing. We'll just get by this player and then we buy that player, and there's no structure. There has to be a clear plan. It took Liverpool a while to get back on track because we hadn't been spending the same volumes. We bought so much absolute rubbish. You only have to go back to Liverpool squads from very, very recently. Now Klopp did it a little slower. He kind of didn't come through as rash as I think Mourinho, to be fair, realised that and knew he needed players, but he was too gung-ho, he was too completely over the top with it. Whereas Klopp was kind of a bit more mellow, and you know, he told the players, you're great, he got a little bit out of them, but then little by little he's edged them out.
But yeah, no, don't forget that. Klopp was absolutely ruthless with that Liverpool team.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I think he sold something on the lines of 14 players in his first season. That includes Driftwood from the younger players as well. But that's what United need to do. They need to get rid of all these players that do not belong at Manchester United, and they need to restructure the team.
The good thing that Liverpool did as well, they were able to sell off, I don't like to call them deadwood, they're able to sell off players that weren't necessarily required for first team football at very good prices. You even look at Jordan Ibe, went to Bournemouth for 12 million. Brassmith went to Bournemouth for 6 million. Even Ward, the third choice keeper, went to Leicester for 12.5 million. They've recouped so much money. And like that goes down to Mike Edwards, who's been wonderful in his role. And he got absolutely lambasted by both Liverpool players and by the media and by opposition counterparts as well, but he's done a remarkable job, and you know, himself and Klopp are clearly at the right stage. And you even look at the Van Dijk kind of a transfer, like it's a classic example of where they didn't do what United did, was where they couldn't get the first player they wanted, and then they went, oh sure, look, we'll just buy him. They waited what they had, you know. Klopp told the players that, yeah, you're great, he improved them, he got them going, and then when Van Dijk was available, he splashed the cash and got him. They need to have that kind of resistance, that bit of just kind of get things on shape at the moment, because at the moment for their absolute mess, and while they're a mess, you're going to have performances like always. You're conscious after bad performances not to go over the top, but that is, I think, it's a big wake up call for United for the big problems on and off the pitch.
Well, that's the difference between Liverpool and United, though. Liverpool have a sporting director who has experience in football. United, if you look at the direct correlation of what's going on at United post Fergie, there's one man that springs to mind, and that's Ed Woodward. The man is he's a fantastic businessman. He's transformed United as a club, as a business, but he's buying players based on what is the best business move for Manchester United revenue-wise, and that's where United are going.
I'll argue some of the...
You're buying players to get social media followers and buying them to sell shirts. For example, Zlatan Ibrahimovic turned out to be a great signing in the end, but what was the main thing that was said when United spent that money on Zlatan? We made that money back on shirt sales. That's not why you buy footballers.
You'd argue Pogba was a similar signing.
That is the only reason United spent that amount of money. They would not have spent that amount of money if they didn't know that they were going to make it back.
Hashtag Pogback and all that.
Pogback, exactly. They had a Hollywood style movie trailer based on Pogba coming back to the club. But on the business side, it was a great move because despite Pogba absolutely, well, I'm not going to say flopping, but not living up to potential whatsoever at United and being the main frustration at United, they're probably going to double their money now because the transfer market has completely transformed since Neymar's move to PSG. So United spent 100 million on him. They're probably going to make 200 million on him now, despite him having 3 years that he hasn't really done anything.
Mm.
So if you're working without a director of football or a sporting director and you're a businessman, that's a great move. That's great business. Why would you be angry at that?
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem with United at the minute.
Yeah, but like Liverpool had this problem as well, not to the same levels of United. The expenditure wasn't at the same levels as what United had, but like, go back to Brendan Rodgers at Liverpool. Like, he fought tooth and nail against Edwards, and they had to make up a transfer committee because he wouldn't allow a director of football, and there was so much mess, and it took years and years to undo all that. And it's only now they're slowly getting back on track. That's a bigger mess to sort out at United. And ultimately, unless that's done and get fresh, like you look at Liverpool squad now, it's such a family kind of tight-knit community or gathering that the players are almost willing to do anything for each other. So you have that bond, you have that chemistry. But also, just look at it. There's so many of those players there that are just a couple of years from hitting their peak, like potentially, like who knows what's going to happen in football. I think the average age is down in the mid-20s at the moment. Like if you take that the average player in their peak is towards their late 20s, there's a couple of years of players going to come in their peak. Whether they stay at Liverpool or not, that's a different question. But the talent is there, the setup is there. And I think ultimately, as much as it pains a lot of people, that's the model where United need to get to.
Yeah, and will they get to it? Probably with the money they have.
They'll
get it right.
But they need. It's a big summer ahead now. Even leaving Solskjaer to one side, it's off the pitch. There's a big summer. You need to get a proper director of football in, and you need to get get that deadwood, if you want to call it out, and get things on shape with them. Because at the moment, it's almost like it's not a retirement home, but it's gone stale, and there's too many players sitting there just gathering their big paychecks. Need to get some motivation back in it, because you contrast it to the Spurs' squad, where there's absolutely no money. Well, not no money, but on comparison to what United have spent on wages, etc., and you'd argue that they're a better in football and unit. It doesn't really add up, does it?
No, but look, that's for Man United to worry about. That's it for this week's show. Anyway, Jonathan Higgins, thanks for coming
in. Thank you.
End the call.
Cheers.
And that's it for this week's show. Thanks to Ronan Mullen as well for popping in earlier. Take it away, Johan.